Sif-Beis, Shemen Sif-Beis, we have what I would call the parameters of Mora. Right? The Siman started, which we had Shir on before Yom Ha'atzmaut, you know, the Siman started with the importance of Mora, the importance of Kibud Av V'Em. But now, the Tur and Shulchan Aruch are getting into the nitty-gritty. And in Sifim Beis and Gimel, they're going to delineate the parameters and the scope and the extent of Mora. And then we'll get more knee-deep into the issues of Kibud, starting with Seif Dalet. So for the purpose of today's shiur, we're going to focus on Seif Beis, and that is the scope of Mora. Seif Gimel discusses Ad Heichan Mora, how far do you have to go when your parents really push you. So that's preview of coming attractions. But for today, everything's good, everything's hunky-dory. It's just a question of what is included, what is the scope. So the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch basically are codifying what is a straightforward Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph from the Beis and Kiddushin, which is really a Sifra in Kiddushim, in the Taurus Kohanim, which basically lists Mora. We have basically the following categories, which we hopefully will try to review and amplify and elaborate on now. Don't stand in your parents' place. Don't sit in their chair. If they have a, you know, Makom Yuchad, don't contradict. Lo Listor, not to be Machria, which sounds like it means don't agree with your father, which sounds like a funny thing to be told in out of context. And the last one or two, don't call your father by his name. And then we have the most interesting one is what happens if your friend has the same name as your father. What do you do about that? So those are the five or six things which are part of the scope of Mora. And I'd like to divide it up, I guess, more or less into four categories. Before we do that, I want to just give you an introductory insight, which I saw last week, and I have a chance to share with you before this, in a tshuva, a very beautiful tshuva, by the former Rishon Lezion, or Bakshi Daron. I'm not sure if you can become a former Rishon Lezion. I think once you are, then you are always. But there's right now Rav Yitzchak Yosef, the previous Rishon Lezion was Rav Amar. Before Rav Amar was Rav Eliyahu Bakshi Daron. So he has tshuva svarim called the Binyan Av. So the Binyan Av and Chelik Beis, he has what I think is a very, very nice insight into the nature of Mora, which is kind of underneath or hovering above everything that you guys have been learning the last few days. If you take a look at the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, when he lists these basic things in Mitzvah Resh Yud Aleph, and the Chinuch is in also Siman Resh Yud Beis, coincidentally, the numbers are almost the same. The Rishonim there, when they speak about all these things you are not supposed to do to your father or your mother, they all add a certain attitudinal component. That you're supposed to be doing these things out of real awe. And in some cases, they speak about actual fear of the parent. You should view them, you know, as if you're looking at a king or queen, as if this is somebody who, in theory, could take your head off if you disrespected them. There's a lot of attitudinal issues. Now, why is that important? Because perhaps that relates to a very basic question, which is actually asked on the Gemara and on this basic points, which I'm not sure if any of you thought of. I'm not sure I would have thought of on my own, but once you hear the question, I think it's almost a very compelling or obvious question, which is the Sefer HaMachne points out, Mitzvah of Mora, that's Mitzvah Aseh or Lo Taseh? Mora of Aim? It's Mitzvah Aseh. Now, why did anyone hesitate for a minute? Why were you hesitating? Correct, but more than that. Be more learned than that. Why are you hesitating? Because all of the examples in the Gemara and the Torah of the Shulchan Aruch, they're all things not to do. Don't stand in their place. Don't stand in their place. Don't call them by the name. Don't disagree with them. How can you, in what way, you know, it's a weird mitzvah saseh. You fulfill that by all the not, by the don'ts? It's a really interesting phenomenon, right? So once you hear the question posed, it's almost obvious, but you know, you don't always notice these things right away on our own. So the Machne gives his own answer, which we don't have time to get into now. Our Bakshi Daron gives what I think is a very beautiful answer in light of the insight I mentioned to you from the Rishonim. And that is that the essence, he says, perhaps this is true about Kavod also, we'll have to get to that middle or end of next week. But the essence of Mora, he says, is not the activities that you do or don't do, but the attitude that motivates not doing those things. So you don't sit in their place or you don't contradict them, because how could I possibly contradict them given that they are, and I am. So that attitude, there's a chi of aseh, there's what I say to have the attitude. Memelo, when you have the attitude, You won't do X or Y. I'll just read you one or two lines from Rav Akiva Yidron, just because I thought the language was so beautiful. He says, you're not, all these things is really a fulfillment of an asay, because you're not supposed to do them mitoch yiras hakavod. It's all based on that tremendous awe that you have of the parent. Shehaben rochesh Lama says, Aviv, you can't even imagine how am I going to compare my father to my mother? When I don't contradict my father or my mother, something which obviously we're going to get to the details soon, but when I don't contradict them, lo rak isor, it's not just that I'm avoiding it because it's usur, elamitoch yirap nimit amuka. Because the genuine, deep, heartfelt awe and reverence that we have for the parent. Lefish enubam amad sukal batel tibre aviv. Who am I? So if the only reason, it's interesting Shiloh, right? If the only reason you didn't contradict your father is, I remember it says in Gemara, technically I'm not allowed to. I know much more than that guy. Right? It's not clear that you fulfilled the mitzvah asei mora, even though you didn't contradict him. All these knots are results of the big must. The big must, the big asei is to have that sense of awe, of reverence. And therefore, we may see some nafkaminas based on this, that everything that is, quote, prohibited, are all things which would be a zilzul in that feeling, or that wouldn't generate, and things we're avoiding are things that we're doing to generate that feeling of awe, of distance, of reverence. Now, we will also see, and you may have seen this already, in the Aruch HaShulchan and others, that there is an issue of mechila. So mechila is a technical term that, yes, the father, the mother can allow all these things. But I would just add, even before we get to those technical specifics, that I think it's just important to note, this is something I was thinking about over Shabbos actually, that I know with my own children, and thankfully I'm, Baruch Hashem, I'm proud to be right now currently a member of the sandwich generation. My parents are alive, I'm a children, so I'm in the middle. I'm both a child and a parent. But you know, I don't really want my children to like be scared of me. I'm not scared of my parents. I don't think they would ever have wanted me to be. So, like, am I not ever fulfilling this Rambam, this Chiddush, the whole mitzvah? So I think the answer is, in some broader sense, you could call it mechila, or you could say the mora changes. But there's no question that in our day and age, you could argue in certain circles it's gone way too extreme. I don't know if in your communities it was ever popular or common to have this phenomenon of calling the parent by the first name. But I think for like many centuries, they read this tour, they read the Shulchan Aruch, and they're like, who would ever do that? But it's not that long ago, at least in America, there was a certain, you know, want to be close with the parent, or break down the boundaries, my dad's my best friend. No! You gotta go somewhere else for a friend. You should be close with your father, you should be close with your mother. You should be the two of the closest people you are in your life. Until your wife, maybe the two closest people. But not because he's your best friend, not because she's your best friend. They're your parent. And there's, I think what can never be lost, what Mora is teaching us, and what we'll see Kibbutz also, but especially Mora, is there should be that sense of distance. Now, does it have to be exactly the Rambam envisioned it, you know, hundreds of years ago? I don't think so. Because to some extent, and maybe you'll just call this Mechila, but, which I'm okay with, if the parent gets to set the parameters of that. So I don't think a parent, I think it's a mistake when parents totally relinquish everything. That's not helping their child at all. But the parameters, the format, it's not just that technically your father can say, yes, it's okay, you can sit in my seat. But the broader idea, that feeling that you're supposed to have, I think that also can be measured based on the parent's expectations and demands. Everyone hear that? Any questions on that so far? Okay. Let's discuss, we'll try to go quickly, but again, if you have questions, please stop me, okay? The first issue the Shulchan Aruch Torah discusses, standing in your parents' place. So we're all probably familiar before we started this limud that you're not supposed to sit in your parents' chair. Right? For most of us it was a new one, this idea of standing. What is that talking about? So that's actually at the Torah quote to the discussion from Rashi and the Ramah. Like, what are we talking about? You can't stand in their place? You know, some of them notice they can't even point out, like, anywhere your father walked, you can't stand. I mean, that's absurd. It can't be. So Rashi and the Rambam, they try to struggle with what's going on, what you know, what's what the issue is. But basically, again, that, I think you've all seen it, so for our purposes, I don't think we have the time or the need to go through everything the Beis Yosef said, but the Beis Yosef basically, you know, discusses Rashi, when Rashi has this idea of you're not supposed to stand in the same place where your father or mother have some special gathering when they need advice, when they're having those DMCs, you know, your father or mother have some big life issue, they have their kitchen cabinet, they have their, you know, advisors that they're speaking to, if there is such a place. Anyone's parents have such a thing? Not mine either. But if they have, if there be such a thing, says Rashi, that's where you can't stand. So how does that relate to Lo Yishev? And that's when the Ramah says, no, Lo Yishev, man, you can't sit in a place where your father usually sits, your mother usually sits. But basically, by the time you get to the Shulchan Aruch, the bottom line is, what emerges from the Beis Yosef, which is important practically, in Lomdus, but more practically, and you see this again, I don't know if you caught it, but it's in the Lashon of the Beis Yosef like three times, I think, before you see it in the Shulchan Aruch, is that all these things, the sitting and the standing, are talking about a place that is a makom miyuchad. There has to be something that's designated, and there's a certain thing that, oh, this is my mom's thing, this is my dad's thing. Anything short of that, whether it be a seat or a location, in shul, in the house, then you know, there's nothing to talk about. But there's this idea of miyuchad. And that's, you look at the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch says, you can't stand in a place that's miyuchad for advice, or miyuchad for davening. I guess they didn't have chairs in those days. Any of you ever been in a shul with no chairs? If you go to some of the big Hasidish places, the big Hasidish Batei Medrash, like the Ger, I haven't been there in many years. No, I've actually been there once in the last 20 years. I was there once, like 4 years ago. But in the Ger, the big Ger based Medrash in Mea Shearim, there are no seats. Because as big as the place is, there's too many people, and chairs and tables take up space. So they can fit whatever thousands of people standing, they'd fit, you know, less 20% if they had to put in chairs and tables. So it's that's what sounds like the Shacharach was describing. He says, you can't stand in their place in shul. But obviously that's transferable in our world. Don't sit in their place in shul if they have a makom kavua. Right? If there's a makom kavua, this is your father's seat, he always sits there. So even if he's not there, you don't sit there. Right? You should stand in their place if they have this makom yuchad for advice or something like that. And also, of course, if you know they have a special place at the head of the table, let's say, where your dad always sits, where your mom always sits. So I saw something interesting. I don't know if you ever thought about this. It might relate to some of you guys. In some cases, you know, let's say your father, maybe because of work or something like that, let's say he goes to Shacharis every, you know, every day. Or maybe, you know, his work schedule doesn't allow him. He's only there, but he's there every Shabbos. So he has his makom yuchad, but it's not for every davening. It's not three times a day, 7 days a week. So let's say you're at a tefillah that he never goes to that shul. Right? This is my father, you know, this is the Shabbos, you know, he's there every Shabbos. Maybe he's getting his name on the thing, you know. But on a Tuesday at Mincha, he's never there. So what do you think? Should it be? Is he also to sit in that seat or not? What do you think? Yeah.
I think it should depend on whether he, like at Tuesday Mincha, does he just not go to that shul, or does he sit somewhere else in that shul?
Okay.
Because if he just doesn't go there, people will think, oh, when your father's here, that's where he sits. So you're sitting in the seat. But if he sits somewhere else on Tuesdays,
good. So that the first half of what you said, not the contradicted, even the second half, but without the benefit of the second half, just the basic point. So I saw that's quoted as a psak from Rav Eliashiv. He agrees with them. Rav Eliashiv says even though he never davened mincha there, and this is a mincha or whatever, it's a Tuesday, he's never there on a Tuesday, but still, if this is known as when he's there, this is his seat, then you still shouldn't sit in there. It's also worth noting, if you guys caught this, on the Aruch HaShulchan, so he points out something which is very, very important. I would say this, especially if I was teaching women or in a shul, but even to young men and hopefully future husbands and hopefully all sons, which is that says the Aruch HaShulchan, you should just know this all applies to mothers too, even daughters and mothers in shuls or sons and mothers at home. But what does the Aruch HaShulchan say? Something fascinating. Who caught this? Who wants an insight into sociology or history? Says how come the Shulchan Aruch never talks about sitting in your mom's seat at home? He says the women don't usually have a makom yuchad at the table. That's Aruch HaShulchan, Siv Tet. Yeah, maybe some of you missed it, but that, he says it in favor. But if she has a seat, she has a seat. It says the same thing in shul. If your mother goes to shul every Shabbos and she has a makom kavua, then it's also for you. No, obviously it's also for you to be in the women's section. But it's also for your sister to sit in that seat. So that's important to note, even in this context. More broadly, you should know in general, this is both obvious, but I could also give you makaros if you're interested, 99% of all Kibbutz Av'eim applies equally to mothers and fathers, sons and daughters. There's like one case, which we'll get to, the famous case of, what if your father and your mother are arguing about what you should do? Who do you listen to? But short of that, as a child, that there's no other, there's nothing that you would be obligated towards your father that fundamentally you're not obligated towards your mother, and vice versa. So, you know, just because they weren't politically correct and it's just easier in one form or another. So all the language of Shulchan Aruch and Gemara is all in the masculine, but it's not meant to mean only the father. It's definitely applicable to mothers as well. Now, one of the issues, just I think to be practical about this, and it's in Makorot you saw, but I'll add a few as well, which is, does this apply if no one else is there? Sorry, please. Yes, yeah, so if you would be a woman, so as a daughter, if you then get married, how do you negotiate? That would be the second thing, correct. So I said, from you as a son, the obligations you have to your mother and father are equal, except for in the case that they argue. And the only second thing out of the hundreds and hundreds of halachos, there's only two, one only applies to sons, and one only applies to daughters when they get married. And please, God, we have time, we'll discuss that as well. So not for you, but for your wife one day. And you as a good husband, hopefully. But anyway, but with these cases, not sitting and standing, does that apply when no one's around or only when you're in front of your father or from other people? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd say they do apply, since like the beginning of it, that it's all about the attitude. It's not about the actual master of sitting or standing.
Good. So who, not the beginning of, because he's currently living, he should live and be well, but who in Makoro addressed that? Who would you catch? Did you catch that? It was discussed by somebody. Who, whether these issues of sitting and standing in your father's place apply only in front of your father or in front of other people in public, or even in public meaning someone else is at the house.
Ben
Ishchai, good. And before him, he was arguing on somebody. The Taz, the Taz, correct. The Taz is the big machmir here, but Jason, he's machaven, and you're machaven. This is what the Taz says. The Taz basically says, Ishchai, very well done, Zach. The Taz is the machmir here. The Taz says, at the end of the day, it's about your attitude. And therefore, even if nobody's there, you can't sit in their place, stand in their place if there's such a thing. The Ben Ish Chai quotes an opinion initially that disagrees. Initially, he thinks logically it shouldn't apply, but then in the end, he says, given that we're talking about a Suffolk Shel Torah, it is a Daraisa, you know, better to be Machmir. So there is such a Svara, but the Taz just gives the basic point. But your Svara, very similar, I didn't see the Binyanav himself discuss it, but I might have missed it. But another contemporary 20th century Posek, who actually just died only a few years ago, you ever heard of Rabbi Binyamin Zilber? He was sometimes referred to as Rabbi Binyamin HaTzadik, because he was. But he lives in Bnei Brak. He wrote many, many Svara. So his most common and popular series are called Oz Nidberu. So in the volume 8 in Chelech Chet, he passes like the Taz, and he gives your Svara. He basically says, the whole idea is you're not supposed to do things that will lead to a diminution of the feeling of Mora. So me sitting in my father's seat, doesn't matter, he's there, no one's there, but even in a subtle way, that could limit it. Now, quickly, before we move on to the other issues, because we don't have time to spend too much on any one of them, but there are quite a few heterodox limitations. Yes, Zach?
What do you do if your friend sits in your mother's seat or you want to?
I don't think there's a problem. As far as I can tell.
As in, don't you have an obligation to prevent anyone from sitting in the seat?
I'm not sure. I didn't see that anywhere. Did you see that? I didn't see that anywhere.
I just thought because the Benish guy is a starting Muslim, so I thought it may be different for Ashkenazi.
I'm not sure. I think we're machmir that you should sit in the seat no matter what. But I think somebody else, Adarabba, if you had 10 friends over, you know, that's the solution. You know, you can't sit in your father's seat, but I think if someone else was sitting there, it seems to me, if someone is aware of a source or you find something that says something differently, please let me know. But I think the whole issue is your relationship.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily your friends.
And,
yeah, please.
And actually, if someone's sitting in your father's seat and your father's approaching his seat, do you have to tell the daughter?
So I think that's a larger issue, which is, even let's say you have your own seat.
Yeah.
So I happen to be a kanoi, not about many topics, but about one of them. This is one of them. I'm a very big kanoi that when you come into shul, if someone is in your seat, you find another seat. That's my personal belief. I could be ma'arich about why I feel that way another time, but I would say, whether it's you, your father, or anybody else, I'm not saying there, maybe certain shuls have rules. Certain shuls have a 15-minute rule. There are shuls like this. I'm not, no joke. I saw many good people abuse that. By which I mean, not because of bad people, because everyone likes their makom kavua. But I saw many guests feel dislocated and alienated from that. So I was very, very kanash in my shul that, I can't say everyone listened to me always, but they knew where I stood on that. You want your seat? Come on time. You know, if you're late, you're late. So I would say it's the same thing. Now, obviously, it's a little bit more nobler to be doing it on your father's behalf than on your own. But personally, I still think if there's a guest sitting in the seat, your father should be okay with it. You should be okay with it. And you'll just come, you know, earlier next time. Yeah.
Is it possible that might be an issue of kavod if a friend's in your father's seat?
I'm not sure. I don't. But hold off till we get the kavod. You know, put it on the back. Put it in the laptop, and you know, say, make yourself a note, and we'll see when we get back to it. So briefly, just a few limitations, you know, important, you know, heterim, or where this does not apply. So first of all, let's talk about the standing. So first of all, the Aruch HaShulchan, and it's already in the Shach, points out something obvious, but you know, we always should put it. There's no issur of standing where your father always sits. Right? The issue is sitting where he always sits. Standing where he always sits, if anything, is a sign of kavod, that you're not sitting there. So that's obviously not a problem. That's, I think, number one. Number two is that the Aruch HaShulchan points out, why did we, this whole standing thing with Rashi, your special place for advice, like, the whole thing's so foreign to us. So I think the Aruch HaShulchan also, if you had a chance, maybe you noticed it, I think he was bothered by that. He says, he calls it muvan me'elav. He says, obviously we're not talking about a normal father in a normal family. This is what normal father's got his, you know, oh yeah, don't go there, that's my father's advice place. He says, we must be talking about like somebody who has some kind of really important position where they have, you know, we call the kitchen cabinet, they got their advisors, you know, but just that's not a typical kind of thing that there's something that, oh yeah, you know, as opposed to, that's the standing, as opposed to sitting, he says, you know, every man is a king in his own castle. Even the most simple person, you know, in most families, but it's certainly not a question of wealth, you know, the father sits at the head of the table, or the father has a seat at the table. The head, the tail, the middle, whatever it is. But most houses, that's nothing to do with how wealthy, how famous, how important the father is. So the issue of sitting in their place, says Aruch HaShulchan, that applies no matter who you are. But the standing thing, you know, if your father's the president, and you know, when his advisors come in, there's a certain room in the house where only they use, and that's known, or a certain area in the living room. Okay, so then this halacha applies to you. But the average person, he points out, this would not be relevant. And if that's number one. In terms of the sitting, so is it applied to anywhere that's unique? So what else is unique in your parents' house, in your house to your parents? So you have their chair at the table, theoretically. But, to be blunt, there's also the bedroom. Rav Yashiv discussed, can you sit or even lay down on your father's bed or your mother's bed? Or is that a violation of kavod? So Rav Yashiv actually is quoted as saying it's mutter. I know certain parents, this is now Hilchos parenting, this could be Rabbi Schreiber's shir for you, in his life cycle shir or whatever, but you know, who think, you know, parents should never let kids in their bedroom. Okay, that's a separate discussion, if that's good parent rearing or not, to have kids at any age in your bedroom. But let's assume that if we're an older child and the parents aren't in the bedroom, there is a problem with the child sleeping in the bed, says Rabbi Yashiv, no. Because it's only a kisei shel kavod. The head of the table is my father's seat. The head of the table is my mom's seat. So I shouldn't sit there. But the bedroom is not that. That's just, you know, everyone's got to sleep somewhere. So you lie in your father's bed, you take a nap in your father's bed, or whatever, that, he says, would not be a problem. That's one interesting psak from Rav Yashiv. A second interesting psak. Let's say your father's chair is not in its regular place. Can you move the chair, or if the chair was moved, whether you did it deliberately or not, but sitting in the chair, but if it's not at the head of the table or wherever it usually sits, you know, is it din l'chefza? What's the halacha? What do you think? So it's an interesting question, right? So he says, you know, Rabbi Yashiv wasn't known as a man of like, you know, material things, but like he gets very specific here. He goes, well, really, it depends on the kind of chair. If it's the same chair as everybody else, right? The dining room, every chair looks the same. But one of them at any point is at the head of the table. So if it happens to be that it's that chair got moved somewhere else, there's nothing special about that chair. It's the place, the head of the table, that's the special thing. So then he says, yeah, you can sit in the chair. What's the difference? You can't sit at the head of the table. But it's not the head of the chair. He says, but in some houses, in some kitchen, you know, living room sets, dining room sets, the head of the table is a different kind of chair. So some people might get a different pattern or a more fancy chair. But even, I just know, for example, in my house, the dining room set that we have, all of the, I think we have 8 chairs, 6 of them have no armrests. 2 of them, clearly intended for the head and the tail of the table, the mother and the father, have armrests. So there, I think, if your family, which those 2 chairs are, you know, 99% of the time, those are the ones always at the head of the tail of the table, or when you're having, you know, your family Friday night dinner, that's your dad's going to always be sitting in that chair. It's not ever, you know, going to switch. So then I think you should avoid it, even if it's somewhere else on the table, or you know, everyone's sitting in the couch and you need some extra chairs, and you know, you want to bring in a chair, don't bring in your father's chair, or at least you shouldn't sit in it. I thought that was an interesting psak. I'll give you another interesting one. Most of you may not have heard of him. Even in America, I'm not sure how well known he is, but certainly not outside of the United States. There's a posek, a very significant posek, who lived for many years in Flatbush in Brooklyn, but now he lives in Lakewood. His name is Revival Cohn. I don't think none of you have started Hilchos Nida yet. He has a very popular sefer that Americans who are learning for Smicha use called the Bali HaShulchan. Anyway, Revival Cohn discussed the following interesting case. Let's say your parents were divorced, and you live with your mom. So your dad's, you know, there used to be, you know, your dad's chair, but he doesn't live at home anymore. But let's say every now and then he comes for visitation, or let's say it's a good divorce. So every now and then he comes back, and he goes back to his own seat. But he's not usually there. He doesn't live in the house anymore. He moved out. So when he's not there, are you allowed to sit in that chair or not? And he says, yes, you can. It's not a problem. Even though he occasionally still visits. Have a homer if he never comes back, which is probably more typical. But let's say, even in this case where he still comes back to the old house, says that's no longer his chair anymore. He lives in another house. You can't have your chair in someone else's house. So I thought that was, again, that's rare, but interesting. The bottom line for all this, and then we'll move on to other cases, is this is going to be a theme alert, but I think it's important to note, is that for all these things, Mechila works. So I think in certain families, the expectation is that you're not going to sit in the chair, and if you want or you need to, then you should ask your parent, and then have the right to be Mechila. That's how it works basically in my house. My younger son, I wouldn't say it happens all the time, but you know, every few weeks at least, if not more commonly, you know, my 10-year-old will say, Abba, is it okay if I sit in your chair? So, barring anything completely unforeseen, I always say yes. But it's the right thing to do for him to ask. That creates a certain attitude, which I think is important to develop. But it's also true that in many cases and in many families, it may be already to the point where it's an automatic mechila. And the father can do that also, if he wants, whether it's at home or in the shul. The Aruch HaShulchan speaks about it in shul. The Aruch HaShulchan says nowadays people, you know, again, I don't know exactly what the shul looked like in Nevardik, where the Aruch HaShulchan was, but he writes there in the Siv Tes that it's okay for a son to stand where the father in his father's place, because you don't even need a mechila beferush, you don't need an explicit mechila, because it's just assumed that that's what's commonly done. That's what's commonly done, and you can assume that the father mechila.
Stepfathers.
We will get to that. That is its own sugya. What's known as Eshes Aviv or Baal Imo, right? If you have a step parent. There is a halacha, just the short version is there is a halacha, Kibbut Avim does apply to step parents, but why, to what extent, are there differences that we'll perhaps get to, okay? But there is definitely a halacha of step parents. I'll give you the short version just in case this is practical in any way, is that if to take the case of a stepfather, if your mom would want you to do or not do, then it would be definitely you would have to be very clear about that. Could a stepfather theoretically be mocha? Maybe, but to the extent that the family cares, meaning whoever your biological parent is, they would really it definitely would be a halacha. Okay, and let's move on because we're not going to get to enough. I'm skipping some things. Oh, just one quick thing, which may be relevant if you have older siblings, and if not, please God, it will be relevant to all of you soon, which is what happens when you have a child who's married, and the father comes and visits the child. Any of you have married siblings? Young crowd. You do. So in some families, there's a concept of even when the father's visiting, then the quote man of the house, who's really the son, lets his father or invites his father to sit at the head of the table. You ever seen that? Ever heard of that? So the Aruch HaShulchan discusses that. The Aruch HaShulchan says no need. By the way, here's an important marmakum, especially for you anti-Hasidim. He writes there, no, the son is allowed to stay in his regular seat next to his wife. Right? I say Hasidim because in many Hasidic families the husband and wives eat in separate rooms. So you see, the Aruch HaShulchan clearly was not a chassid, because he mentions specifically that you don't have to do that. But the more poskim who say that there's a certain hidur of offering your father that. So I know people who do it. I'm trying to remember. I'm Kenai Nahara, married now 21 years. I think when I was first married, I might have like said that to my father. Or example, I remember when he first came for Shabbos, I asked him if he wanted to make Kiddush, or he wanted to make Hamotzi. But at some point, it became clear that he didn't. Like, he was for sure Mocha. In fact, if anything, I think he had Nachas that I was doing it. So I stopped offering. In Aruch Shulchan says there's no need. Yeah.
So even in Mechila, I mean, like, I don't know if it's brought up yet, but definitely it's brought up with the calling the name when it applies to your Rabbi. You are the Rebbe as well as your father. But Mechila is Mechila different by a Rebbe. It's here to do it most of
scholars. For the most part, it's parallel. For the most part, it's parallel. Yeah. I would say that's a broad assumption. Okay? Good. Okay. One last point, which is just to point out how pretty much we got a hold of this at all, but if you may have noticed, in the Beis Yosef, it's not in the Tur, and notably, it does not make it into the Shulchan Aruch, but the Beis Yosef quotes this, I'll call it, strange idea, the Orchos Chaim, that you're not supposed to sit next to your father unless there's a mechitza. Right? That's at the end of Sif Beis, right? I think, correct? Or in the middle, I should say. Where is that? Catch that? The Beis Yosef, not in the Tur. Beis Yosef says, where is it? Did I not quote it correctly? Yeah, I know that he did, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know why I'm not seeing it. The Beis Yosef quotes in the Orchos Chaim that you're not supposed to sit. I don't know why I'm not finding it at the moment. Oh, thank you. Yes, yeah, Berakha Bayis. That's like a second edition of Beis Yosef. Thank you. Kosev Orchos Chaim. Sha'asar leishi b'tzido b'lo emtsa'im. He brings a riot, it's a pasuk in Tanakh. Anyway, really bizarre, right? So the Aruch HaShulchan is the one who said it's really bizarre, not me. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, we never heard of such a thing. He says the proof is not a good proof, and he also says, we never heard of such a thing. I add that, first of all, because you may have heard, and if not, at some point in your life you will hear, that the Aruch HaShulchan, in his Chloloi Horov, where the Aruch HaShulchan paskins, he very often takes minhag into account. So this is a good example of that. He leads with, whoever heard of such a thing? Like, all these holy Jews in Nevada, no one's doing that. And by the way, it's not a good proof. But like, his orientation is, if all the good Jews aren't doing something, it's probably not true. So that's the kind of point he makes. He says, none of the poskim quoted, it's not the minhag. So I think the answer is, because I don't think the Aruch HaShulchan is crazy, I think the correct shot is what I quoted you also, I think from the Ben Ish Chai. I'm not sure if I put this on the sheet or not. If I didn't, but it's also in the Ben Ish Chai and others. So more recently, Yashiv or other people talk about this, which is that it doesn't mean in a normal circumstance. In fact, some people point out that Adarabba, like in a shul or something, you know, sitting next to your father, it'll give them the greatest nachas. You know, like to assume that should be a problem doesn't make any sense. So they say, you know, it's talking about a case where maybe where your father's sitting is a special place kind of reserved for dignitaries. You know, you go to some shul dinner or, you know, some groundbreaking, I don't know, the Holocaust Memorial Day, or you go to Yom HaZikaron Tekes and there's some special, you know, thing up front. Your father's one of those people. So you shouldn't just sit there because that's implying you think you're as important as your father. Okay, so if there's some rare situation like that, you know, that doesn't happen too often, so I guess, and you probably don't need a halacha to tell you not to sit there anyway. That's probably a little bit commonsensical. But anyway, that's just one last Arab. Okay, let's move on now to not contradicting and not agreeing, and hopefully they'll have time for the names as well, because I think those are also, that's also interesting. So the tour here, you know, copied by the Shulchan Aruch, tell us two different things, again, based on the Gemara. Lo listor, don't contradict your father. Also, lo machria, es dvarav. So again, here also the Torah quotes Rashi versus the Rama, and a lot of explanations of the Beis Yosef to try to answer Rashi. But basically, the bottom line is the way we pass on the Shulchan Aruch is everyone's right. In other words, they're both true. That is to say, you can't explicitly just contradict your father, but Lomachria is also telling us that you can't just, so to speak, you know, you see your father getting into an argument, you think you're going to be the big hero and say, oh, my father's right. So that itself is considered disrespectful because it implies as if your father needs you to agree with him, as if that's, so to speak, wicked. So that's the two basic halachos, that there's certain disrespect if you even say, I agree. So here, one of the big discussions, which is very relevant, it's a little bit complicated, it may have made sense for you to kind of make a chart almost to keep it all straight, is what is allowed, what are we talking about? In front of the father, not in front of the father? Issues of Torah, Stam, issues of politics, like what's the parameters of this? So it's a lot is discussed, but just very briefly, there's a machlokes about whether this is only in front of them or even not in front of them. The Shach says, Shach of Sifkat and Beis, that the prohibition of contradicting your parent is even shelo b'fanav, even if it's not in front of them. But the Vilna Gaon argued on that, and as you saw, the Taz says it's impossible that that's true. What's the Taz's proof that that can't be true? Because how did the Tur always argue on his father the Rush? It must be that the reason the Tur could argue on his father the Rush is because when he was writing that Sefer, I don't know what year he wrote the Tur, but his father wasn't necessarily sitting there when he wrote, I disagree with my father. And therefore he says, whenever you have the fact that we have people throughout the ages who in Torah writing, it says if you read their father, that shows that you're allowed to disagree, shelo b'fanav. Yeah.
In such a case as the Rosh Hashanah, etc., were they able to contradict someone, their father in your art?
I'm not saying that's the only answer you could have given. That's what I'm saying. It's interesting that presented with that question, the Taz's answer is to look at it and say, oh yeah, writing, or it's not a question of writing, but you're not in front of them when you publish the book, or you're not publishing when you're giving the shiur, so that's considered, hold on one second, that's considered, shelo b'fanav. Now, the Shach obviously disagreed with that, because the Shach holds, you're never allowed to argue shelo b'fanav. So you, according to the Shach, you would need to have a different answer for how the Torah could argue on the Rosh or whoever else. There's a famous Rambam where he quotes his father in Hilchos Shechita, my father said this, but I disagree. We have examples of this. We sort of have examples of people quoting their father-in-law and disagreeing. So the Shach would have to give a different answer, because the Taz's answer of it's all Shlomo Fonov would not help. Yeah.
So we saw something, I think it was one of the sources that said that when you bring a riot that's
good,
that it's actually the Torah.
Good. Good. So the Prisha, who's quoted by others, the Prisha says, if you, what does that mean, lo lister? This is the bottom line. Lo lister is if you just say, you're wrong. Or, my dad is wrong. Or, we saw the post can point out, or if you go to the other person and argue on your dad, you just say, you're right. That's also counted as stira, right? Ask your father if he really, that's like splitting hairs, right? Your father's in a big argument, and you go to the other guy, you're right. You know, I don't think your defense would be, I didn't say you're wrong, dad. So he's right, right? So obviously that makes sense that we also usher. But that's if you just say categorically. But if there's an argument and you point out, yeah, but Tosus in Shavuos disagrees, so that's what he says, that's not the child contradicting the Torah, that's the Torah, the child contradicting the father, that's the Torah contradicting the father. And that would actually be technically okay. The Aruch HaShulchan quotes this as well. The Aruch HaShulchan, I don't have it with me, but the Aruch HaShulchan, I think it's in Yud Beis, is a beautiful, beautiful quote. Right? If you had a chance to read this, it's really quite beautiful. So says Aruch HaShulchan, he says, how could it be? Of course this has to be allowed. He quotes the Rambam there. And he says, Halo Torah Hashem hi. Of course this has to be allowed. This is the Torah. The Hi Torah's MS. It's a pursuit of truth. We don't just kiss up. Flatter people, whether they're your father or not, if we're trying to find the truth. I feel a fun of. Forget behind his back. I feel in front of your father's face. Yachal haben lefalpil ma'av. You're allowed to learn and get into the sukkah and ask questions. L'tareitz, l'hamira halacha, l'mukhona. This is the way of the Torah. But says Aruch HaShulchan, he points out, but if you're going to do that, even then, you may want to talk to your father differently than you talk to your chavrusa. You should talk to your chavrusa nicely too, relatively. Again, it depends on the chavrusa maybe. But you should do it in a respectful way. But whether it's in front of your father, or even if it's not in front of your father, the post can point out, if it's in a process of learning and focusing on sources, so then presumably that would be okay. And that would be another reason to explain how the Rosh and the Tur or these other examples are like that. The Taz and the Chayadim Magrisus also points out, if your father has a shita, but other people have that shita too. So if you have a choice, instead of saying, I don't agree with my father, why not say I don't agree with Rabbi X? That happens with your father's shita too, but it's, again, it's a subtlety, it's a nuance, but again, it shows the sensitivity, which I think is important. The Aruch HaShulchan also points out in Sifri Gimel, what if your father asks you your opinion? Beferish, right? Says the Aruch HaShulchan, then for sure you can tell him the truth, even if it's against what he says. The whole din of the Gemara is, you know your father's an opinion, or you hear your father in an argument, in a discussion, you don't decide to butt in and say, Dad's wrong. But if Dad says, you know, I paid all this tuition, he spent a year in yeshiva, 2 years in yeshiva, you know, what did you learn? Is it true or not? So, if you know the answer, then you should tell him. Respectfully, nicely. But then he asked you your opinion, so then there's no question, says Aruch HaShulchan, that you're allowed to tell him. The Chayyadim also points out something which I think is very, very reasonable. He says, when we say you shouldn't agree, right? Why shouldn't you agree? Your dad is, you know, at the Kiddush Yishul, having a big machlokas about, I don't know, whatever the halacha is with somebody, and you pop your head in to agree with your father. So it looks like, you know, you're as if you think your father needs you, you're an equal to your father. So, says the Chayyadim, that's only befanav. But if it's shelo befanav, stam, you overhear people talking, or afterwards you go over to somebody. He says, the shalom b'fanav, not only is it allowed, he says, that's a kavod for your father. You don't stick up for your dad. That's a certain kavod. So in his presence, when he's trying to make his own argument, so for you to say, yeah, my dad's right, that's a problem. But if he's not there, to just say, yeah, I think, you know, he's right, that's actually okay, yeah.
As one of the shakha be moited to that, because any comments shalom b'fanav on those subjects?
Yeah, I think so. He doesn't say it, but I think it's reasonable that that it would be that they would agree as well. Okay, any more questions on that? Okay, so let's go to the last issue. I think we still have a few more minutes. Let's go to the last issue, which is not calling your father by his name. And then if we have time, the very rare, interesting halacha of not calling your friend by his name, even if it's your father's name. So this is not in the Gemara, right? Everything we did until now was an elaboration on a teeny little Gemara in Kiddushin. This last part is from the Rambam in Perek Vav, Halacha Gimel in Hilchos Mamrim. The Rambam has Hilchos Kibud Av Em in Hilchos Mamrim, which is in Shoftim. And the Rambam says you cannot call your father by his name in life or in death. You know, let's say your father's name would be Jack. You know, hey Jack! You know, I want to call and wish you good Shabbos, Jack. Right, that's for sure. But even afterwards, you know, someone asks, you're talking about somebody, oh yeah, I remember when Jack took me and my mom and my siblings, you know, on vacation, right? You don't call your father by the name, even after he died, says the Rambam. So the Beis Yosef says, you know, where did the Rambam get this from? So he suggests it's from a Gemara in Kiddushin also, which talks about Chacham Mishana Shem Aviv Vishem Rabo. And Rashi there says, the case there was like a Chacham would be Doresh, and if the Chacham is in his drasha and he has something that he's quoting his father, so the Gemara there says he's Mishani, he should change his father's name. As it's saying his father, and whatever the name is, Jack, he should say Abba Mari. That's the source for the idea of Abba Mari. So the Pesachei Tshuva has a very interesting question. It's very practical. Again, this doesn't happen every day, but I'm sure it's happened to me 10 times in my life at least. Which is that you're meeting somebody, oh, you're Gottlieb, which Gottlieb? Who's your father? So I would want to say Ronnie Gottlieb. Not Jack Gottlieb, not Johnny Gottlieb, not this one Gottlieb, not Michael Gottlieb, that's my uncle, not, you know, Mordechai Gottlieb, that's my cousin. Ronnie Gottlieb. Are you allowed to do that? I'm just answering someone who... So the Pesachei Tshuva quotes this. What does the Pesachei Tshuva say? Sifkat and Beis? He says, Pesachei Tshuva, it's okay. Although he does add the little resh. And I know people are mocking for this. My father's Reb Ronnie Gottlieb. A little shinoi, a little thing of kavod. I know somebody, Pesachei Tshuva Beis, I know somebody whenever he gets called up for an aliyah. I do not think you have to be machbed on this personally, but I know someone whenever he gets called up for aliyah, what is your name? So I say, David Shimon Ben Yerachmiel Gedalia. But some say, Ben Reb Yerachmiel. If my father would be a rabbi, I would say a harav. But he's not a rabbi, I just call him Reb. I know some people who are machbed. Anyone have a bubby or a zaidi or a parent who refers to their little kid, there's a Shepsel, or I mean, as Shepsel, there are all these Yiddish things that people say for their sons or their daughters.
Yeah.
Right, so part of it was to avoid all sorts of issues with names. Anyway, people are very, very, people are very, very sensitive to these things. So, again, I think the basic premise of it is there's a lot to be sensitive to. On the other hand, you know, I think that we can generally assume, again, in a lot of these cases, that there's probably mechila. Like, I do not think, in most cases, you need to say, Reb, you know, your father, when you get calls for an aliyah, or who's your father, which Blackman are you? If your father wouldn't mind you saying, oh, I'm Johnny Blackman, I'm Yaakov Blackman, or whatever, so I think you could, that's okay. The Pesach Shuvah also points out from the Amshal Shlomo, he has a whole different answer for the Rush, right? Now, not just about the arguments, but how come the Torah quotes the Rush? He doesn't just say Adoni Avi. The Torah, whenever he quotes the Rush, I'm sure we'll see it, it's Aleph Aleph HaRush. Adoni Avi HaRush. But he does say that. Why did he just say Adoni Avi? We all know who the Torah's father is. Don't we? Right, we all know, now we do, that the Torah's father is the Rush. So, so you could give different explanations. So the Pesachei Tshuvos is based on the Yom Shlomo. You know why? Because he didn't call him Adoni Avi Usher. He called him the Rush. The Rush is a Kinoi Shel Kavod. He's the Rush. And he adds, it's not even just because it's Rabbeinu Usher. He says it's Rosh L'Kol Yisrael. The Rush. So if you're going to, again, I don't know about you, but my father's not the Rush. But in theory, that would be something else that would be, yeah, please.
What happens if one calls one son over?
I want to get to that. Yes, I want to get to that. Yes, I've been waiting to spring that one on you. What about in writing? Someone asked before about in writing, yeah.
Does it only apply to fathers?
No, 100% the mothers too.
And grandparents?
I would think so. I'm not positive off the top of my head, but that is a topic we'll get to. We'll get to grandparents. Yeah. Kavod Zikno is a topic, and the basic answer is there is a chiyuv of kavod, but not to the same degree as parents, but I would assume that this would apply. I don't see why it wouldn't. So there's a discussion about writing, and Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. If anyone's interested, if you want to look it up on your own, it's in Yoredeya, Chelek Aleph, Simen Kuf Lamed Gimel, 133. And Rav Moshe holds, there's no prohibition of using your father's name in writing. Again, I don't think you would typically, you know, if you're writing an email to somebody, note I didn't say writing a letter. I want you guys to know what I'm talking about. Right, writing an email to somebody, I don't think you would say, yeah, Ronnie called yesterday. I don't think you would do that. But if there could be a sentence, you know, which, you know, somehow it came up, my father Ronnie did this, or, you know, so says Moshe, he thinks technically speaking, you know, he doesn't see a problem with that. Not everyone agrees with him, but he says at the end of Moshe, calls up a stam. He says, you could argue about it in theory, but kishamachu aviv, or b'yadua she'enu makbid, en l'esor b'cholelu. He says, most of these cases, you know, in today's day and age, we can assume that people were mocha. Another question he answers, which is very interesting, which is, let's say, Rachman al-Islam, your father needs a mishaberach. You don't get a mikra b'shaberach and ask him, you know, what's your father's name? Or you yourself are saying the b'shaberach. You know, your rabbi has a chole. Are you allowed to use the name or not? Or do you have to add some kind of Abba Mori or something like that? And the answer is you totally use the name. Why? Because there's a concept that the post can quote, ein gavus lefnei hamakom. There's no gaiva, there's no... When you're davening to Hashem, everyone's vulnerable, everyone's the same, we're all just lowly human beings. So when it's the context of Hashem, you don't have to worry about giving. You don't give your father kavod in the presence of Hashem, in the context of davening. So what about if your father's name is Abba? Right? I don't know anybody whose name is Tati, but the poskim do discuss. What if your father's name is Abba? You'd have to call him Abba. So Rav Avadi Yosef has a tshuva about this. It's a fun tshuva to learn. Yoredeya Chelik Beis Simen Tesvav. Where he says, bottom line, I'll give you the punchline. He basically thinks the ikra did is mutter, but if you can, you should be machmir. I wasn't at it. I have a friend. Some of you guys, you know, some of the boys here are from Boca Raton or Hollywood, Florida. So the principal of that school in Florida, his name is Rabbi Kroll. He has a brother named Abba, and I remember he told me once that Abba, who was for many years, I don't know if he still is, in the Ner Yisrael Kollel, that when he made a bris of one of his children in Ner Yisrael in Baltimore, so his drasha, I think at the bris or something, was, you know, will his son, you know, his children be able to call him Abba? You know, with the son that he had, could he call him Abba? So I don't know what people actually do, because that's not such a common name, but if I just said Mekra, then it would be Mutter, but it's a little bit weird. So maybe there's maybe in those families you should call him Tati or something, I don't know, or Dad, you know, English works too. I would say that would be a bit for the English then, or something like that, if you wanted to avoid it. Well, I want to tell you one or two more things. Fine. Okay, any questions on that before we do the last issue of if your father has a really weird name and your friend has the same weird name? Yeah.
Someone asked me a couple of days ago if they can speak to their black polygamist first name, so what do you say to them?
No.
You can't.
If somebody asked you, I mean, you were the rabbi.
I didn't even know
if the parent was, I think the parent could be Malchel.
Yeah.
So a friend of yours asked if they could call their father by their first name, for example? And the father was Mochel or not?
Yeah.
I mean, the father is crazy. It's a huge mistake. You could have him call me. But I wouldn't do it. But is it technically a violation if they're Mochel? No. They're allowed to be Mochel. Okay, last but not least, we have this weird halacha, which also comes from the Rambam, which is, what if your friend has the same name as your father? So Rambam says, if your friend is in the presence of your father, it sounds like, you can't call the friend by that name. I'll make an admission. When I was in high school, my assistant principal's name was Zev, Rabbi Zev, in his last name, whatever. But there was a kid in the school named Zev, so we really didn't like the assistant principal. I don't know about in your schools, but the minute in America is not to not like the assistant principal. He's like, you know, the tough guy, and then all gets everyone in trouble. So our school is like a long hallway, so we used to coordinate that when the assistant principal would come out, like in the middle, his office was in the middle of the hall, to kind of get everyone into class after the new period or whatever started. We'd have the kid Zev at the other end of the hall, and we'd start screaming, Zev, you! And he'd get all insulted, and he'd say, no, not you, Rebbe, right behind you, Zev's there. So that was just me being an immature 16 or 17 year old. I can admit that now. But in all seriousness, says the Rambam, you know, if you're going to call, I don't know what would be a unique name, I don't even want to say, I don't want to insult anybody, but what was the language of the Shulchan Aruch? Hashem Pilai, strange name. Pilai Pilai, wondrous, strange name, unique. You know, and your father has that strange, unique name, and so does your friend. So you're supposed to change your friend's name when you're calling him that, and not to do it in front of your father. It's not clear where the Rambam gets this from. The Torah says, I don't know where the Rambam got this from. Some people try to answer where he got it from. That doesn't interest me right now. But there is a discussion about this. So I'll just give you the basic highlights. In the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, they discuss this, and it's mashma that a common name, which we say is mutter, it's only if it's a really unique name. But to refer to, you know, if your father's name is David, that's a very common name. Your father's name is Avraham Yaakov, those are common names. So there, it's permissible, and it's mashma from the Ramah, it's even permissible in front of your father. So if your friend Yaakov comes over, your father's name is also Yaakov, sounds mashma from the Ramah that this would be okay. Excuse me, I take it back, I said that wrong. It's mashma from the Ramah that in front of your father's usher, it's only mutter shalobafon, excuse me. But even forget a unique name, even a common name could be usher in front of your father. That's the mashmos of the Ramah. And the truth is, if you look in the Rambam, it's pretty befavorish. But the Taz points out that the Drisha disagreed. The Drisha held it was only usher in a abnormal, unique name. But if it's a common name, then it's mutter, not in front of the father, but it's even mutter in front of the father. But the Taz rejects rejects the Drisha. Tongue twister there. The Taz rejects the Drisha. And I think in Shulchan Aruch, that's the consensus view. That a common name is permissible only Shalom Bafanov. And the uncommon name would be, sounds like it would be Asur, even Shalom Bafanov. However, the Chayadim points out that all of this nowadays seems to be academic. Because nowadays, what father is really going to care about this? For the most part. Again, if you know your father is sensitive, then you should be careful. Again, most fathers don't have unique names anyway. And even if it's a common name, so again, if you have your father's common name was Yaakov, you have your father's Yaakov, whatever. Right? Yeah. And you have a friend named Yaakov. How many of your fathers would care when you were talking to your friend Yaakov in the house and you referred to your friend? My father wouldn't have cared. You know, if my son had a friend named David and he called him David in front of me, I wouldn't care. So the chayyadim nowadays, most people are mochel. You don't have to worry about it. So last but not least, but this we conclude, I just mentioned a tshuva, the same one tshuva we quoted a few times, that from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And he discusses the following. He says, what's the problem with all this? If you go back to the story, what's the real problem? That people might be confused, and even though you're calling your friend, they'll think you were really referring to your father by name. It's almost like a Mars Ion kind of thing. Right? Don't do something which people might know. If your father is a really, really rare name, and once you know it, there's only two of them, and the other one is your friend, and you're calling your friend, and everyone knows, oh my gosh, he's talking about his father like that? That's the rationale. So says Rav Moshe, if that's the fear, what if your father is a rabbi? So no one calls your father by his first name. Everyone calls him Reb Ploni or Rav Ploni. So no one would think that you're talking to him about it that way. So Rav Moshe says, for example, in that case, if it's really, practically speaking, there's no concern, he doesn't think it's a problem. Furthermore, Rav Moshe has a bigger chiddush, which I find very compelling. Even without the issue of mechila, nowadays everyone's probably mochel, but Rav Moshe says, even without the issue of mechila, in our day and age, when everyone calls their father dad, daddy, tati, abba, who would have a havamina, right? In your whole life, you probably never called your father by his first name. You know, unless you were describing him in some ways. I said, oh, which black one are you? You know, but other than that, you would never do that, right? You always call your father, dad, or abba. So if all of a sudden you started calling, you know, your friend Yaakov, or Rinkelrubel, you know, Schnitzelbord or whatever, you know, some real unique name. Who would think that, even if you had some crazy name like that, who would think you were talking about your father? Everyone knows you call your father Abba. Says Rav Moshe, in that case, he thinks that's another reason why a person could be Mekel nowadays. But, you know, he says, if you really have some crazy name, okay, probably better to be Machmir. But very, very rare is that going to be an issue. So we went through a lot. Hopefully you saw most of the basic sources already inside. So there's a lot to digest, it's good to review. But the bottom line, aside from these practical issues, which are important to be aware of, again, we saw some pretty common things, some like issues of the chair, it also asks you who your father is. Some of these things are quite practical, actually. And then the larger point, which we mentioned, I think, from Rav Bakshi, which is really based on the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvos, which is all of this, Mora especially, is really supposed to be reflective of an attitude that we have, of a certain level of awe and reverence. And even if it's true, all of us, and my family included, were all slightly more informal with our parents than they might have been in previous generations. But I think it's very, very important. I say this not only for practical advice, but I think as religious, hashkafic, if not halachic parameters, that we not be too comfortable. And the mitzvah of Morah, I say, especially in our day and age, in our generation, I think is a very, very important bulwark against compromising. We saw, and for those of you who were with us in the first year, the relationship we have with our parents is very much a significant part of our relationship to the Masorah. And how we would treat our creators with lowercase c is very much how we often treat the creator with the uppercase c. So there's a certain distance, there's an awe we should have for Hashem. And as much as we feel close to Hashem, there's a certain distance we feel which is a healthy reverence and awe. And it's the same thing I think should be kept. The details we discussed, the details could be subject to time and place, mechila, not mechila, but the basic premise, that feeling of who am I and they're they, I think that's something that they wouldn't be mochalon and they shouldn't be mochalon. And even if they were mochalon, you should be mochalon, because it's very, very important practically, but more importantly for your religious development, it's a very, very important mentality. Okay, shkach everybody. Have a great Shabbos. In Mirza Hashem, we'll pick up with C. Gimel on Sunday, which is the question of, you know,